good morning, Paul. Thanks for taking the time to visit. The year is 2030. What does Madison look like? What are your aspirations?
Well, Madison will probably be, a population of close to 300,000. Mm-hmm. My guess is we're going to have more regional government, not necessarily new governmental bodies, but perhaps the county will have taken over more services. Mm-hmm. The other city or public services will be run by different governments as governments trade services. Somebody will be running health, somebody else will be doing law enforcement. And hopefully, the request of one mother I ran into a few months ago will embody the vision of our community. She said, I've got a teenage son who's graduating high school, and I've got one request, that as he finishes his higher education, he can come back to Madison, be able to have a job here, one that provides him an income that he can afford to live in Madison.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. I like that. You became mayor in 1973 the first time. How have things changed, particularly in education? You know, your kids have gone through the school, so what's changed since those years?
Well, the biggest change is the challenges that the district has in regards to the number of students who are coming from households that are at or below the poverty line, mm-hmm. the fact that we've got ways of opting out of the district, which allows families with higher incomes mm-hmm. to leave the district, the fact that we no longer, as we annex, are able to bring families into the Madison Metropolitan School District. And all of that, along with one other significant area, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which requires a significantly higher level of commitment for special education, means that a far smaller proportion of our education dollars go to what we would call traditional education, the ABCs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big change. Some Madisonians hold Austin and Portland in high regard and think we should aspire to those cities. I don't know if I agree with that, but nevertheless, we hear about this from time to time. Portland has 9 charter schools in their public schools. 2 of those are IB high schools. Austin has 1 IB high school and 2 IB middle schools and a number of charters. Minneapolis, of course, has many charters. Yet Madison residents largely have the same choice they had many years ago with the issues you described. How does this lack of choice or current model, let's say, affect your vision of 2030? I mean, how does that fit?
Well, to me, the most important thing in terms of education is recognizing what I think are the 3 critical elements that make for a quality education system. One is the competency of the faculty. Mm-hmm. The second is dollars, which is measured mostly in terms of pupil-teacher ratios. And the third is parental involvement, the involvement of families in education. And the thing that concerns me most is that the resources are not equitably allocated, and that we make changes which redistribute the parental involvement. What happens is, as we create new types of schools and alternative educational models, we pull out the most active parents, and we pull out their contribution then to the entire school system. For me, it's not a question of our charter schools better or not, but it's a question of, do we, as it is with vouchers and as it is with open enrollment crossing district lines, do we end up then with a model where through self-selection we end up pulling out some of the better students and with them their parents who are the most active, leaving in other schools creating almost drought conditions.
But some would argue that perception or real choice is critical to attracting, you know, faculty at the university. Certainly some of my professor friends who've been overseas say, I can't believe Madison doesn't have, you know, a real IB high school or things like that, right? Or, you know, Verona with their Mandarin charter school, right? I mean, Madison was really late to the game in dual immersion, and they're just starting, and we'll see how it plays out. So are those choices important to affect the organism? I mean, you know, organizations always deteriorate over time. So is that, you know, what role does that play?
There's no question it plays a role. I'm still, I guess my priority in terms of ranking is going to be the overall quality of the general education of all the students. What I like to remind people is that we hear a lot about the creative class. We hear a lot well, let me put it this way. The artists and the creative people are just as likely to be the sons and daughters of scoundrels and laborers as it is to be the sons and daughters of physicians and lawyers and accountants. And I want to make sure that everybody's child has that opportunity to blossom and to create.
Yeah, agreed. So getting to that, should we hold our kids to high standards? And what does that mean today?
Well,
2030?
The changes that I'd like to focus on are not so much changes arguing about charter schools as much as it is focused on curriculum and in terms of setting high standards in that fashion. I'm very disappointed that one of the outcomes of educational reform of the 70s was a dismantling of what I would refer to as classical civics.
Kids
for now, for decades, have been able to go through public school systems without a basic elementary course in American institutions.
Yeah, I had a Vietnam vet teaching in that class in the late 70s, and he was vehement that we know these things.
I would focus more on that.
On
curriculum. I would focus on having classes, advanced classes, as we called them when I went to school, that are more challenging for better students. That's where I'd place the emphasis. And I'd keep going back to getting parental involvement. The thing that disturbed me in the 70s, and it disturbs me even more 35 years later, is when I go to activities involving the students and their parents, and I look around the room, the fact that the complexion of the parents does not reflect the complexion of the kids.
Right. Right.
The parents have got to be engaged to a greater degree. And to be very blunt about it, one of the issues particularly is the role of the African-American mother in education. If you go back and you review high school experiences, girls have a worse time than boys, and if you're black, it's an even more stressful experience. And so the experiences that black mothers have, unfortunately, are oftentimes reflected in how they look at the educational system. And we've got to do something about that.
So Colleen Kerr is back in Madison and has big plans for an IB charter school, black male only, you know, minority,
yes,
majority. What do you think?
I'm not supportive.
Not supportive.
I do not think we make progress by separating kids principally on the basis of gender. And for me, that's the troublesome.
But Chicago's doing more of it.
Yeah, and Chicago's school system's miserable. I've talked to parents in the Chicago school system. And right now, if your kid leaving the elementary schools cannot get into one of the three or four decent high schools, mm-hmm. that system fails everyone. Mm-hmm. That system does not work. I think it's a horrendous model, and I wouldn't boast about anything coming out of the Chicago public school systems. In fact, earlier this summer, when I was on a trip to Chicago to look at the public market,
right.
I stopped in on my own elementary school to see what was going on there, and I had a chance to discuss this very issue with some of the teachers at Murray. And for the kids who can make it into the better charter schools, for the kids who can make it into the high schools successfully in terms of placement, the school system works fine. I don't know what the percentage is, but for the remaining 70-80% of Chicago's public school kids, it's a failure.
But Kleem's point, I've talked to him a few times, is that, you know, nothing's really changed here in terms of minority achievement for decades.
I don't think that's true.
Well, you know, fourth grade Madison African American kids now score worse than Milwaukee.
I realize that, but I'm also looking at some other variables, mm-hmm. such as questions of migration into the city, mm-hmm. whether or not the kids with a foundation here are doing better, mm-hmm. things of that sort. But even if that's true, I'm not going to subscribe to a reform for the school system that is only going to help one group of kids. Because what we've seen in Chicago and in Milwaukee with its voucher system, that we may have some isolated successes with the alternative schools, but the vast majority of the kids suffer and are getting worse.
Yeah, the organization's atrophy over time. So if you were 18 today, 2012, what would you do? Knowing what you do, you know, the classic thing, what would you do?
I'd do exactly what I did some, I don't know.
Rail against the man?
No, I'd go to the University of Wisconsin if I was 18.
And study what?
I don't know. I had a hard time making my mind up then. I happened to end up focusing on history and political
right.
science, but I'd probably do the same thing. The subjects still fascinate me.
Absolutely.
I'd probably take a couple of additional courses, which in retrospect I wish I'd had.
Such as?
Some business management classes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't particularly enthralled with the world of business at the time. but there's valuable lessons there.
Yes.
Economics, same thing.
Yeah. There was a great business history professor here when I took classes in the 80s. He's now in California, of course. But yeah, it's good stuff. So back to the earlier point you made about the parent and this child. For kids growing up in Madison, and they often leave, right? What should they know? What do you want them to know? What's the essence when they finish high school?
I want them to have a sense of stewardship. Mm-hmm. I want them to understand that Horatio Alger is a myth. It's an isolated anecdote. That success and growth and development that people have is generally a result of the supportive network they've had from their family to their neighbors to their teachers, exactly. And that from a strict, hard, calculating mathematical point, on average, you need 2 years of post-high school education to change you from being a liability to society to becoming an asset and to being a contributor. Mm-hmm. And everybody's goal for themselves and for their community should be to a point where they contribute to the well-being of society, that they not be a taker.
So tell me about your relationship with the Madison schools. How often do you see the superintendent? How are you involved? How's it going? What's that like? A few people have asked me this, and I thought, all right, I'll ask Paul.
Well, you know, I've oftentimes said, and this goes all the way back to the 70s,
right.
that there's nothing that the mayor can do to affect the outcomes for the city, to affect the livability of the community, that is as important as what happens in the school system and what happens in our city schools. All right, so we've got the Madison Metropolitan School District.
$32 million a year. Yep.
They operate it, but the city has to be in a supportive role. And getting back to the point about parental involvement and the strength of neighborhood and communities, our biggest role is in developing strong neighborhoods, creating strong places, environments where children are going to prosper and learn. I've had one meeting so far with the superintendent. We've got a couple of teams. But let me point to some things that we've done in the past that I think are critical. For example, from a planning standpoint, we've looked at housing development in a way that reflects the interests of the school district to keep boundaries stable, to keep schools filled with kids, because we've worked and focused to keep families in areas like Tenney Lapham. I think one of the most significant things we did in the 70s was our work in terms of housing and in terms of real estate policy, where both Tenney Lapham areas and a Marquette area were going to both lose their schools. That I think, is one area of focus for the city. Keep the schools stable in terms of enrollments. Secondly, is the neighborhood function. Let's go back to the last week. This past week, the city culminated in about 20 arrests of young people between the ages of 16 and maybe 20 for these beat-down, savage attacks.
Right.
Those kids grew up in an environment in our city which led them to think that that kind of violence, that kind of game, was okay. Those kids did not learn well in our public school system, and they are not serving as very good models for other young people. Whether it's law enforcement or it's community services, we've got to work to build the neighborhoods, and that's the key focus. And, of course, we get a lot of other good outcomes besides
doing that.
Success for the schools.
Exactly. There's a few people who think it's a marketing problem, some of these school issues and neighborhood issues. How do you react to that, Or is it really substantive, as you describe, is it the city can do things or not, or, what's your sense of that?
I guess it may be in part marketing, but then again, the question is, who are you marketing to? I've got a message, which is you've got to be involved in your neighborhood school. And your involvement, it reminds me of a woman who years ago came up to me living in a stressful neighborhood and said, would I help her find a place for her and her teenage kid to live somewhere else? And I said, no, I'm not going to.
Right.
That's not the solution. Running, and plus, even if you move, the city's big enough and dynamic enough, your kid's going to probably get in trouble anyway.
Sure.
It's not a question of where you live. But if you want to stay here and build the neighborhood, if you want to build the school, we'll stand shoulder to shoulder here and make a difference. That's the kind of marketing I think needs to be done.
Ground up.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Paul.
All right.